Hello and welcome to the Tech and Tlaq podcast. I'm Max Multilaro, and I am joined today by two very estimated guests, or whatever, because I don't speak English very well. Two very important persons in my good persons list. Gina Rosenthal and Tom Hollingsworth. So guys, you want to present yourselves?
Sure. I'm Gina Rosenthal. You can find me on Gminx on Twitter, or Wide World of Tech is my podcast. I also blog at 24x7 IT Connection.
Thank you.
And I'm Tom Hollingsworth. I am the networking nerd on Twitter. You can follow me at networking nerd. My blog is networkingnerd.net. I'm also an event organizer for Tech Field Day and a staff writer for GestaltIT.com, home of the on-premise IT roundtable.
Which is both on-premise and on-location, right?
That is correct.
Absolutely fantastic. So it's great to have you, especially on the other side of the microphone somehow. So the thing we wanted to talk about today is to talk a bit about what VMware is doing in the HPC space, especially with GPU virtualization.
Yeah, cool.
I figured out very recently that Gina is working on HPC projects. I have a kind of vested interest into HPC projects due to some work obligations. So I wanted to kind of ask you, Gina, what you're doing in that space, kind of get also some feedback on that topic from Tom. So do you want to go ahead?
Sure. So what I didn't say is I do work for VMware. I'm in the Cloud Platform Business Unit. We're the business unit responsible for vSphere and VMware Cloud on AWS. I'm also dedicated to Dell. So of course, Dell has a pretty good history with selling bare metal for these high performance computing, as well as big data analytics environments. So these big research environments that they sell into with bare metal. What's interesting is we already have joint customers who are virtualizing those environments. And for a while, I think when I started doing this about 9-10 months ago, talking to customers about, hey, you can virtualize these environments, there was some pushback about, well, I don't want any extra performance barrier at all. I have this bare metal. I'm going to get every single amount of performance out of it that I can. What's interesting is ESXi has developed, and that's one of the cool things I find about being in the group I'm in. Like, this is not the ESXi of 5 years ago or even 3 years ago. It's continuing to improve. We see sometimes better than bare metal performance depending on the workload. So big data, a lot of times we can get, Cassandra, we can get that under one-to-one performance levels for virtualizing over bare metal. Some of the workload applications like MPI for HPC, because it's so chatty back and forth between the different nodes, we still have, you know, a few percentage points of difference in performance. But what we're finding now when we talk to customers is they're willing to talk to us about virtualizing because the performance that they lose, sometimes it's worth it with the security and the manageability and just the normal virtualization benefits that you get with vSphere. They make that performance difference up in all of the care and feeding that they have to do with the hardware to keep the clusters up. The other, I think, really big objection that we got for a long time was, oh my God, vSphere is so expensive. We're trying to keep these costs down and I can't afford to, you know, a license for every CPU for, you know, Enterprise Plus. Mm-hmm. So what we looked at was when people are writing HPC and big data applications and they're doing these different models for computation, what do they write into their applications that we could get rid of in the vSphere stack? And one of them was DRS. Let's take that out. Can we bring the cost down? And we did. So we have a edition of vSphere called vSphere Scaleout that is sold in packs of six, much less, like probably a third of the cost of Enterprise Plus, gives you everything except, you know, the DRS stuff you need. So depending on how you write your applications to do these kind of things, that's covered. So that's what I'm up to, is talking to people about that and letting people know, like, if you're bursting to the cloud, you're virtualizing. So you're not thinking of doing something really brand new.
So what you're saying is that if you're doing HPC in the cloud, you're using someone else's GPU?
Someone else's GPU, and I've left out that part with vSphere, but like, yeah, someone else's GPU, somebody else's environment. If you put it in the cloud, you're not putting it on a bare metal environment. Mm-hmm. You're putting it on top of VMs. Mm-hmm. So if it's depending on what you're actually researching, is it really critical? Is privacy super critical? Why not build a private cloud with vSphere and have that available to burst to? Then you know you wrap your arms around it and have that control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you think about the kind of data that they're using, especially if it's kind of restricted from a regulatory perspective, and they may be forced to build their own private cloud and say that I guaranteed that this workload end-to-end was absolutely 100% never in a publicly available S3 bucket or something like that.
Right, and it's even more than that, right? So think about if I have a... Research is a good example, but I think even like an enterprise commercial is a great example too. If I'm a pharma company and I'm testing genomes here and some type of drug here and x-rays here, like how the drug impacts on a drug, if you have that all in one organization, that's a whole bunch of different patient information from three different organizations. If you use vSphere, you can do what virtualization does on-prem. You can cordon that off. Okay, here's your cluster, here's your cluster, here's your cluster. I think so that privacy is built in. And then with all the improvements of privacy we've done, and then if you want to layer on App Defense and NSX for the privacy stuff, that's even better. Like you can lock it down even more depending on what your requirements are.
Yeah, and I think of a lot of, going back to some of the regulations, not just in research, but in like financial, where these two workloads should never ever be able to talk to each other, because if any data leaks between them, like the federal government's going to come on down you in a hammer.
Yep.
And so by using NSX and microsegmentation and things like that on top of it all, like you said, you can pretty much guarantee that. Yeah. That, and not only can you guarantee it from an operational perspective, but you can guarantee it from an auditing perspective. So when the auditors show up, you can run a report and go, guess what? It's still not talking to itself.
Yeah. And it's a huge deal, right? Mm-hmm. I think the other piece is just management, right? So if we take that same idea where you've got three different research groups in your organization needing to do things, they all go, because I think historically these are the data scientists, the IT people are like, all right, whatever, it's data scientists, we're not dealing with it. So they might have all disparate hardware. If they're really researching stuff, they probably have two or three different versions of software for the OS, and then you layer on the research applications they have,
right.
All sorts of different. It's a nightmare, and we don't want the data scientists doing that. We want them
absolutely. I think it makes sense because I would say maybe for historical reasons, research organizations used to have their own budgets. They were investing in hardware and all, but they maybe are more focused into the research aspect and not so much into the operational aspect of managing the infrastructure, making sure that hardware lifecycle refreshes are being respected and so on. And then you come to the end of the road, which is the hardware is old, is obsolete. You need to invest into new hardware. And of course, hardware which was purchased 5-6 years ago from now, the needs have grown in the organization. What used to be, let's say, the top notch infrastructure for doing whatever kind of modeling you need to do with HPC and mainly with GPUs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now the needs maybe has increased tenfold, even more. So
yeah, and you think about that. I mean, we're at Dell Technologies World, and one of the things that we're doing from a vSphere perspective was we're really encouraging people to get off 5.5 and go to 6.5 or later. But the reason this is important is we're finding lots and lots of customers are on hardware that they bought 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't support the vSphere of today. It doesn't support vSAN. Yeah. It doesn't support these really just intensive operational stuff. You add
correct.
on the science stuff,
mm-hmm.
the HPC stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to take like that whole all of the software to a different level. So the hardware and the chipsets and how it can process things has changed so much in 5 years. It's insane.
So when did you start adding this kind of HPC support extensions into the hypervisor? Was it with version 6, with 6.5?
So the only thing I can think of, and I'm going to say 6.5, but I bet it was earlier. It was for GPUs.
Mm-hmm.
You can virtualize it. You've always been able to virtualize these workloads. We've got customers
absolutely.
That have been doing it, right? It's not something you can't do. It's the fact that we didn't have a really great cost savings for people, right? So the cost savings came, I think, with 6.5U1, like back in the fall. The GPUs, I want to say 6.5, it might have been a little earlier. I know with 6.7, we released a new capability. We actually have a very tight co-engineering relationship with NVIDIA, with their GRID software especially. So we, 6.7, we released a new capability where you can suspend and resume jobs. Super important when you look at, well, number one, you can see the GPU in a virtual environment. Right now you can carve it up, and right now whatever job takes over the GPU takes over the GPU, and that's how it is. And we have some customers I've talked to love it because they can virtualize it, which means the admins keep it in the data center versus in a desktop server underneath the scientist's desk, because once they give it, get the GPU, they're not giving it up. And those are expensive pieces of hardware, right? Mm-hmm. This allows you to share it, working on ways to share it better. But the suspend and resume allows you to not only share it from a virtual perspective, if something goes wrong with that particular server that that GPU's in, I can pause the job. Maybe the job's going to take me 3 days to run. I'm in half a day. All of a sudden, I get some crazy, you know, hardware failure that I've got to power everything down. Instead of having to restart the entire sequence, I can pause it, vMotion it if I want to another box that has a GPU in it. Mm-hmm. You know, shut down that server, fix it, resume it on another server, or just pause it, fix the server real quick, and resume it. So you save time, and that's all that we're talking about when we're talking about trying to find this, extract this meaning from the data. How I want to do it fast, and sometimes it's life-threatening if you're not able to do that fast, mm-hmm. right? So.
Yeah, and having priced GPUs recently, that's not something that's a resource you want to have control over and that you Absolutely. Want to use the maximum amount of time that you can. And I like the idea of being able to carve up a resource pool because, let's face it, there are some data projects, whether they be research or, you know, whatever you want to run, they don't need all of the cores in a GPU. You know, the people who own the GPUs like to think that because the more workloads they're running, the less likely someone is to come in with their own workload. But it's so important to be able to utilize those resources to their maximum capacity and capability. And that's one of the things we've wanted to do with virtualization forever.
Exactly.
It's just we're finally getting to the point where we can do it with specialized hardware.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it. This is no different than VMware a few years ago saying, we can virtualize Oracle. And all the Oracle people saying, no, you can never, ever, ever virtualize that. So it's a virtualization thing.
It's kind of great to see kind of VMware reinventing themselves because you would think that with all the cloud speech that we're getting served all the time, you would think the hypervisor is dead, it's no longer strategical to VMware. And yet, you see that with the 6.7 release, you see that it's still kind of making sense to using the enterprise world. And what you were saying, Tom, before about sharing resources is really important, especially if you work in a large research organization, because the cost of the CPU is extremely expensive, and you don't want to build silos where everybody is kind of having their own little playground to play with very expensive toys, right?
Yep.
So you want
right.
people to wear them out kind of evenly somehow.
Well, yeah, and I think that the whole idea, well, the first thing about the whole, everybody forgets about the hypervisor. Everybody forgets about vSphere. It is the core of everything. Everything else that we do at VMware, that is our bread and butter, is what everything is built on. If you don't have vSphere at a certain level, you're not going to get the features of the other products. And we're the compute, and we're just like there. We're reliable. Everybody forgets that we're there. And you know I'm a diva, so I'm like, talk about vSphere. Let's talk about it. And I was going to say something else, and I forgot it.
Well, I think it's really important because, like you said, the core of everything that VMware works on is vSphere, whether it's NSX, whether it's the cloud stuff.
vSAN, all of it.
But what's important to people is not the core, it's the functionality they get on top of that, which is really what they get from the cloud. Nobody cares what workload hypervisor you're running underneath AWS as long as your stuff boots. And so that's, but by de-emphasizing vSphere and talking about the applications and the features that run on top of it, you have that capability of deploying it everywhere.
And I think that's the exact thing, especially in this space. If you look at, I'm actually giving 2 presentations tomorrow, and that's part of what I'm talking about. If you look at what the data scientists do, they're like, I have this problem, I'm going to have to run it through this neural network, and they figure out which neural network it is. And they're all different, depending on what the problem is, how deep that neural network goes. If it goes really deep, it turns into the deep learning. If not, it's just machine learning. And the data scientists figure that out. And I think we as infrastructure people, we have to understand what that application is. So if you have data scientists in your organization, they define what that neural network is going to look like. And you should be able to say, oh, it's that type of neural network? You're going to need this many servers, and you're going to need this much CPU, this many GPUs assigned to it. We should be able to start making that translation. And what that means for IT is then you bring yourself into this new era where you're providing the platform for the data scientists where they're not thinking about how what my OS is or what this is. They just say, I've got this and I need to deploy it. And we do what we do best, which is manage that infrastructure. And we have GPUs that we pay lots of money for and we share them out and we enable these data scientists to do their job, which is, you know, solving world problems.
Mm-hmm. But I think that you're also bringing another topic with virtualization is that because you're abstracting from the bare metal aspect, you're adding into the availability. Of course, if you're building a highly available HPC virtualized HPC cluster, then of course you need to have a front investment, which is you need to get more GPU, right? But on the other hand, if something goes wrong, then they are not hit by the fact that the whole cluster is down, which
exactly.
which if you compare it with the cost of running the simulation and the cost of investing in the hardware versus the cost of not being able to do the research, especially in a highly competitive environment, makes a really big difference.
Right. And then what happens if, you know, maybe they run something and they do the calculations, they look at it and they're like, no, let's go rerun it again and we'll do this neural network or we'll do this or whatever changes. If you have virtualization and you have, you know, these, if you have these kind of templated what these look like for your scientists mm-hmm. and you know what they're going to need, mm-hmm. you can just deploy that really quick. You don't have to worry about racking and stacking a whole rack, you know, a couple of racks mm-hmm. of servers to get it ready for them. You can say, blah, 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 it's ready, go. They don't know the difference. They're going to log into it, into the server the same way as they always, the virtual servers the way they always did. So being able to have that ready and available, especially when things change and they have to run it through a different thing and they make mm-hmm. changes, it allows them to iterate even faster.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at it as well, I was thinking, and we were talking about that this morning, if you tie in automation into that, then it makes even more sense.
Right, because what if you can just put the platform out there and say, mm-hmm. oh, these are the 10 neural networks you guys usually use.
Exactly.
Here's what we would recommend for you to deploy as a cluster. Mm-hmm. And all they have to do is, bam, put it out there. And we have the other automation watching it if something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff that we can bring with vSphere mm-hmm. and all the VMware products that surround it.
So it's interesting. So it looks like it's kind of revolution, the revolution which happened with standardizing x86 workloads maybe 10, 15 years ago,
yeah.
even more if you look at historically at what VMware did. But if you look at the adoption of ESXi, was maybe what, 10, 12 years ago, more or less. Well, so you're doing kind of repeating that again now with HPC workloads, which is
right. And that's the whole, you know, so here's my product marketing spiel, but that's the whole intention of vSphere is how we look at it. How do we help people deploy any application anywhere? Wow.
Okay.
That is loud.
Okay. So it looks like they're starting to play music here at Dell Technologies World, and it's kind of a sign for us to probably end the discussion. So Tom and Gina, thank you so much for participating. It was a pleasure having you, and I hope we'll have the occasion to talk about other stuff next time.
I hope so. This was great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Bye-bye.